This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Coming to the bat for the answers here.
The one show that helps you make better money moves. The program all about your money, your business, and your life.
You guys talk about a lot of really good information that even I can understand.
Call Ray now at 844-RAY-SHOW, 844-RAY-SHOW. This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Hey, everyone. Thank you, and welcome to the one talk show in America all about your money, your business, and your life, a program that helps you make better money moves. Johnny Dean is in the house. Now, John, I know
that
we've been talking about this best practices thing for 3 days.
Well, we've been teasing it. We haven't really talked about it. That's the thing.
So I will get to that, no doubt about it. Got lots of other stuff on the agenda, including emails. By the way, you can email me right now. Go to raylucia.com, R-A-Y-L-U-C-I-A.com. Simply click on the Ask Ray button. Gets right to me, and I personally address all of you.
That's no joke.
No, it's no joke.
No, you had somebody called you, actually.
That's why I get up so early in the morning and stay up late at night. My wife asked me, what are you doing when your iPhone? Because I hate sitting in my office on the computer. So I'm on my iPhone, and I'm reading. My eyes are bugging out, and I'm reading emails and answering them.
You mean like in the dark there? Is your...
No. I'm downstairs. She's upstairs.
Okay, I was going
to
say.
She comes down to let the dogs out, and I'm sitting on the couch.
Okay, all right.
That.
So you're doing
I just, I don't know. I just don't like working in my home office for some reason.
Oh, I kind of enjoy it. But, okay.
Well, maybe I should work in your home.
You can come and work. You can work in my home. I don't have one, but you can work in it.
What kind of snacks do you...
You might be surprised. I got some pretty good ones. I got ice cream for you because my wife loves it.
Oh, golly. 844-RAY-SHOW if you want to chat. 844-729-7469. Okay, we talked about best practices with financial advisors. If you do not have a best practices financial advisor, then you may be leaving a lot of money on the table. How much? What do you think, John?
Well, I've seen the evidence, but it wouldn't be fair. But
okay,
we'll tell people.
We'll tell you because it's a lot. But I start today with this. I've gotten emails over the years, and a recent one that got my interest because I had a hard time finding this article. But I remember reading it years ago. The article is titled "When Does a Bonds First Withdrawal Sequence Extend Portfolio Longevity?"
Now, that's a wonky kind of title. But to me, it says something much shorter than that, which is what we've been talking about, the strategy we've been talking about, low these many years.
Yeah, it's Robert Wigand and Robert Irons, Ph.D. Wigand's a Ph.D.
The two Bobs.
The two Bobs. So sit back, folks. Relax. It is the Ray Program. Oh, that's what I'm talking about.
You like this
Lover Boy. This used to be our intro song.
Yeah.
Adam, keep this one coming. I don't care what John Dean says. He hates it. I like it.
I saw them
in person, that's why. And they did it really, really well.
Lover Boy. Now, you know, the problem with going to a Lover Boy concert, or even being Lover Boy and playing concert, is there are only one or two songs the audience even wants to hear.
Exactly.
So no matter what you come up with that's new or play to get it, they're
that's
all going to yell.
A lot of groups.
Play Working for the Weekend.
It's true with a lot of groups. Not true with the Beatles. Not true with the Beach Boys.
No, but if you only had one hit or two and you're out on concert, that's all anybody wants to hear.
I only had one or two hits, actually.
I know that. Yes. They
were, and the happy song didn't get very far.
No, that was your only hit, and I think only three people knew about it.
So I want to talk about this because Wigand and Irons did a study way back. And the reason, I'll tell you how I got this. Oh, and you'll remember. Do you recall back in the day, we were on WGSO in New Orleans.
Yes.
And we went back to, was it the college? I'm trying to remember where
Tulane?
We did. I think it might have been.
Well, we were at Tulane. We did a show from Tulane University. We also, I think that was the same trip that we went to David Oreck's place.
Yeah, okay, well then it was Tulane. So we're doing the show, and we met a professor, and I cannot remember his name. Remember the professor we met?
Yes.
Anyway, so I was talking about this, I don't know, it was probably 5 years ago.
Was he on the air with us?
Might have been.
We had guests back then, yeah. Anyway.
But he followed the show religiously. Anyway, So I was talking about this about 5 years ago, and I said, doggone it, I just cannot find it online. I can't find the article. Now, I could probably have bought it through Financial Planning Magazine.
Oh, of course.
I was too lazy to do that. So anyway, I get an email like the next day from this professor with the article. He says, is this the one you're looking for? And I'm going, oh. So I've copied this like 1,000 times. So in going through, you see over here, I've got the stack of stuff, right?
Yeah.
I get yelled at every day because I literally have 1,000 pages of research here.
You have 1,000 just sitting on the desk. If people are watching on Biz TV, we got to clean you up.
So as I was cleaning up the other day, I come across, when does a bond's first withdrawal sequence extend portfolio longevity? I'm going, wow, we need to talk about this because as we have discussed in the past, remember the whole strategy that we talk about here. Once we get our guaranteed income and all that stuff and semi-guaranteed income stashed away, we want to make sure that we have a portfolio that's structured to mitigate sequence of returns risk, which Johnny Dean will tell you.
Well, it's simply the risk that you're going to start taking money out of a volatile portfolio, which we don't recommend. But if you're going to do that, the risk is that for the first couple of years or sometime in the first 5, 6, 7 years, you have a one, two, maybe three years that aren't so hot. They don't even have to be really far down years. They just simply have to be down years where you're taking money from what we call a declining portfolio.
Exactly.
That's the risk.
So allow me, if I may, to dig into this by just reading from the executive summary, because I'm not going to read an entire research report. And I might have to put glasses on because this is really hard for me to see. Are you going to... Do you want to read it for me?
I don't know what you want to read out of it. It's
okay. Well, let me try it.
All right, do the squint.
I have my wife's reading glasses because mine got stolen out of my Escalade.
Who takes reading glasses?
Well, they took my reading glasses. They didn't take my really cool sunglasses.
And they took your reading.
But they took my reading glasses and my other glass. They took like three different glasses, and they left. Thank God. My briefcase with a computer in it.
So hence the all points bulletin for some suspect with astigmatism.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This paper, this is the executive summary. This paper explores the effect of withdrawal sequencing decisions on the longevity of retirees' portfolios by comparing the strategy of consuming bond assets first with two other strategies, consuming stocks first and maintaining a 50-50 stock bond portfolio. Okay, translation. You're in retirement. You've got a portfolio that's 50-50 stocks and bonds. Do you spend the bonds first and then the stocks? Do you spend the stocks first and then the bonds? Or do you do a systematic withdrawal and rebalance the portfolio to a 50-50 mix every year?
In other words, take some of both and then rebalance.
Exactly. Quote, we find that consuming bonds first extend investor portfolios 90% of the time over the other two methods. However, investors who consume bonds first transition to the riskiest portfolio with significantly higher annual volatility than the alternative strategies. You just wrote about this, mm-hmm. called the rising equity glide path.
Yes, which, again, goes against the very idea that somebody would have something like a target date fund beyond retirement where it takes you, or that stupid 100 minus your age
right.
thing, which tells you if you're 90 years old, you should only have 10% in stocks.
We find that by considering the current spread of stock yields over bond yields, practitioners can identify a market signal that reliably forecasts when a bond's first strategy will produce the largest gains. Not true.
Nope.
Not true. They wrote this, by the way, in 2008. And you know what they said? It's not a good idea to do this now because the spreads are such that you should keep this rebalance. No, because guess what happened in 2008?
I remember.
Yeah. In either event, I'm not saying everything that these professors always say is true or not true. I'm just saying that stuff happens. But what I found was really interesting is when you evaluate it, and I'll talk off the top of my head from having read this 26, 36, 46 times.
Yes.
When you evaluated it, the 10% of the time that it didn't necessarily work, it kind of still did, but it just wasn't statistically significant. They went back to 1890-something.
A long time ago.
136 years of data. And spending bonds first worked out better 90% of the time, and the other 10%, it was not statistically significant. More on that when we come back. Welcome back, folks. This is the Ray Lucia Show. Okay, so where we left off, and for those that are just tuning in, and this is important, two finance professors did a study a couple of 3, 4, 5, 10 years ago, actually 11 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
And it stuck with me all these years, and I was able to find it through a professor from Tulane University, actually, mm-hmm. whom we met, Johnny and I met, back when we broadcasted from the steps of Tulane.
2004, I think it was, when
it was
we
back,
were there.
It was back in the day.
Yes, it was.
Anyway, I wish I could remember his name. I totally apologize.
Forgive us if you're watching.
Yeah, really. But anyway, the article was titled, and the study was titled, When Does a Bonds First Withdrawal Sequence Extend Portfolio Longevity? Long way of saying, just spend your fixed income first in retirement, and everything else will work its way through. Having that rising equity glide path that we talked about last week, that's exactly what happens when you spend bonds first. If you're 50-50 in stock and you spend 10% of your bonds, right, you're now 60-40 stocks over bonds, right? And if you spend it down to zero, you're 100% stock, which everybody says, oh, 100% stock, that's way too risky. That would be true if you didn't do the balance of the plan, which is making sure that you've got your essential expenses covered by what? Guaranteed income. Social Security, pensions, annuities, bond ladders with tips, or whatever. That's between you and your advisor. That's not what we do anymore. We talk on the radio and television, but we talk about stuff that's pretty freaking important. And this is one of the most important lessons I ever learned in finance. And that is, even the professors and everybody else sometimes gets it wrong, because these two professors got the spending bonds first right. They went back and looked at 136 years of data, taking a 7.5% fixed distribution from retirement accounts, and determined that spending bonds first worked 90% of the time, produced the best results over a 50-50 mix, rebalanced, or spending the stocks first. So it worked 90% of the time, but the other 10%, because I looked at the study, it was statistically insignificant. So it's basically spending bonds first, instead of doing that systematic withdrawal with automatic rebalancing, which I can assure you, unless your advisor has attended any of my classes or is a religious follower of this program, that's what they're doing. They are doing a systematic withdrawal with some kind of annual, monthly, every other year rebalancing to stay consistent with the asset allocation mix. Or they're doing what you said, John. They're doing 100 minus your age or some target date strategy that takes the glide path in the exact opposite direction, making it more conservative as you age, which increases the odds of you going broke in retirement.
And why do they do this? Simple reason is because it's easy. It's easier to do. I can't think of another reason.
There's been a lot of research done on rebalancing and so forth. kind of a mixed bag, but most of the research that's been done on rebalancing is discussing the accumulation phase.
Yeah, of course.
Not the decumulation phase.
Of course. You got two phases of life. All you ever hear about is the accumulation phase. How much am I making? I'm going to reach my retirement number. I don't even know if they still say that anymore.
They do on TV commercials.
What's your retirement number? You reach it. Great. Now what do I do? Ah, you're on your own. Or, well, just do the reverse of what you did. You take put money in. Now we'll just take money out. Simple as that.
And this is where a lot of the money managers, I think, really get it wrong. They focus on the assets that they have under management instead of really focusing on a retirement distribution strategy. So when we talk next segment about best practices and how much value a best practices advisor can add to the equation, you will find that in the best practices category, the withdrawal strategy is high on the list. How do you access your money once you do hit retirement? How do you access it? Do you do it the easy way? Because it is easy. With technology today, it's like the advisor doesn't even have to think about it. Some computer in the sky sends you a check and automatically rebalances your portfolio.
It's easy.
Just like that. And the advisor charges you 1% or 2% because they're rebalancing for you? No. It's some computer doing it for you.
It's easy.
I know. I used to pay a lot of money for that software.
It drives me crazy. There's a lot of work involved in making sure that this happens. Now, as your equity portion starts to go up, you can do along the way certain things. Value averaging comes to mind.
Strategic.
That's all it is.
Reallocation.
It is strategic. We talk about, you know, spending when we talk about segmenting the different, if you want to call them buckets or whatever you want to call them, you know, as you start to spend down the safer stuff to live off of, exactly what they're talking about here. But as, you know, maybe the equity portion is getting big. Maybe you've had a nice 10-year run, 9-year run. Along the way, before you spend everything down to zero, you're probably doing some value averaging. Skim some of that stuff off the top. Well, you know what? No computer program is going to tell
somebody. But it has
to
be strategic because,
yes.
Okay, what's the tax treatment going to be?
Am
I going to be in a high enough tax bracket where it might not make sense, or should I keep it rolling that way? Or what if I've got a bunch of losses? I've got a business loss because I'm a self-employed person.
Right.
I might want to value average a ton of gain.
Because I can wipe all that off.
It's all
offset.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this is why advisors exist and why we're going to talk about this best practices thing, which I've written 26 pages on. I'm going to read every one of those. No, I'm not going to. When we come back from the break, right?
We're not going to do that. But you see, being a good good at anything, I think, requires work. It requires work. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people out there who just set it and forget it. I'm talking about advisors is what I'm talking about. They'll just punch a number into a computer program. They'll spend 10, 15 minutes with you doing something on the computer, and then they're done. I've seen you work on things. I've seen you take an hour, you know, just figuring out numbers for some people. And not just you, but I've seen, you know, other people do it. People we work with. It's work.
Yeah, like the Plumster who just came in and made a cameo.
Well, we said Professor Rick Plum. People know who he is. We should talk about him.
We
should have him. Well, we're talking about him. We're going to have him on the show.
He's going to have him back on the show, but he's got to catch up first. He just said he's buried. He came in. He's like in jeans. He's not dressing up because he's buried with work.
He's
and that's good.
Work.
I mean,
yes.
You know, when he worked for me years ago, he never worked that hard.
Well, what were... Isn't that odd?
Because he knew I would always outwork him, I guess.
I know.
No,
he's
the greatest, by the way.
Well, what we're trying to do, what we're doing from here on out is making him... We'll tell you more about this, but making Professor Plum available to everybody. Not just as a, you know, not just free service and all
that
stuff
on the show. Well, he's the advisor's advisor for 25 years now.
Exactly.
He's advised advisors. In fact, he would always fill in for me if I couldn't make a workshop or whatever. He'd go travel and tick people off.
He would make people mad, which is why he doesn't host this show anymore.
But
he's smart.
He's now working with individual clients, which is a blessing to the individual clients.
We'll tell you more about that as later.
All right, best practices coming up.
You got a piece of...
Welcome back, folks. This is the Ray Lucia Show. Glad to have you on board. Johnny Dean is in the house. We've been talking about your money, your business, and your life. I do have my microphone.
I'm paranoid.
You were looking around.
I've had to look every time because anytime we leave the studio and come back during the break, we put it back on. And just a couple days ago, both you and I had our mics.
Yeah, that's hard to do a talk show.
You got
to
have a
microphone. You have no microphones,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. All right. Yeah. By the way, 844 Ray Show. If you have any questions, you can give us a call. We're here till the top of the hour.
We're talking about BPFA.
I know what that means.
What does it mean?
Best Practices Financial Advisor.
I've written a lot on this. I've talked a lot about it because it's so compelling. Because one of the things that financial advisors have to do today is they've got to earn more for their clients than they charge in fees. Otherwise, everybody's going to be a DIY investor. What do they need you for if they don't add value, right?
DIY, do it yourself, for those of you not or abbreviation, you know,
or whatever.
Don't know about it.
So I thought we had an email on this the other day.
Well, we did. It was from Eric. I can do it here real quick. We don't usually do emails here, but I can just. All it was this. This was like 3 or 4 days ago. I've heard you talk about best practices advisors. Where can I find one and what should I be looking for? That was among other questions Eric had, but I want to bring that up here.
Okay, so basically, what is a best practices financial advisor? These are advisors that are committed to not only a career in financial planning and investing and so forth, but they're also committed to working in an environment where there's a team. They surround themselves with the right team of professionals. Because last time I checked, it's really hard to be all things to all people. I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. If you want to add value as an advisor and you think you're going to pick the stocks, you're going to rebalance the portfolios, you're going to do extensive amounts of financial planning work, tax work, get involved in analyzing real estate and mortgages and doing estate plan, if you think that you can do all that for your client, you are smoking some kind of weed. And it's illegal weed, not the legal stuff.
Now it's
can't
like,
say that anymore.
You got to
do
something
so
else.
What?
Yeah, okay. I just bought some down at CVS or whatever.
The other thing is you need to make sure that in your field of expertise, you can offer the best in financial advice. So, what happened was so much money has been flowing into index funds that advisors decided they'll just move all their client assets into a bunch of index funds, closet indexing as it's called, and then charge a fee to do that. And I've always been against that because the fee that they're charging shouldn't be for putting them in an index fund. It doesn't take a genius to put money in a fund that's run by a computer. And anybody can do an asset allocation model. I mean, there's a gajillion programs that do asset allocation models, optimization, software, all that stuff. And I've owned it all in the past, and it's got some value. How much value? I don't know. You can count it in basis points. But if you hire a best practices financial advisor, now we're not talking about basis points. Whether they put your money in index funds or actively managed funds, it's the planning part of this that really makes a difference. So we did research for years, really, on this subject. All the way back in 2001 or 2 or 3, Vanguard. Now, what is Vanguard known for?
The do it yourself.
Cheap index funds.
I think they started index funds, actually.
They did. And Jack Bogle just died not too long ago.
Yes.
So Vanguard went out to assess the value that what they called a best practices or an advisor that adds alpha is worth. Now, alpha is that percentage of risk-adjusted gain you receive by having a good advisor. That's what Advisor Alpha is. And here's what they described as being the components of being a best practices financial advisor. One, build a customized investment plan aimed at achieving goals and meeting constraints for risk tolerance and risk capacity.
There's a mouthful.
Two, minimize risk and tax impacts.
Easy.
Three, behavioral coaching.
Important.
Important and sometimes not so easy.
No, not so easy. I didn't mean to imply that tax, you know, management is easy, but I'm saying that that's an easy thing to include because that should absolutely be something that your planner or advisor is doing.
So this covers five areas, according to Vanguard. Total wealth asset allocation, and that kind of speaks for itself. Dynamic withdrawal strategy. It's what we've been talking about. Some kind of a dynamic withdrawal strategy, which might include a dynamic spending strategy. I've done lots of research on this. And those individuals that have more flexibility in spending have a huge advantage over those individuals who are inflexible with respect to their spending in retirement. Those individuals that have a consistent withdrawal strategy, we were just talking about a bonds first withdrawal strategy, have a much better shot at making it than those without any strategy at all or those with some kind of a flawed strategy. The third one, annuity allocation.
Whoa, you said annuity.
Wow. I moved on from the Vanguard study to the Morningstar study.
Oh, okay.
I gave you the Vanguard ones.
Yes.
Building a customized plan, behavior coaching, and all that stuff.
These are the things that a best practices advisor these are the things you should be looking for.
I apologize. I jumped ahead to the next study because it's not just Vanguard. Vanguard, who made their bones on cheap index funds, saying your advisor can add 4% per year. If you subtract 1% was the traditional fee that they might charge, they put 3% to the bottom line. 3% per year annually. That's coming from the cheap index fund company.
This is the one that was started, as an alternative to paying any advisor anything at all.
So that's Vanguard. So then you go over to Morningstar. Now, Morningstar took a little different approach. They didn't really look at the behavioral coaching aspects, which incidentally is worth about 1.5% per year. That if you're an advisor listening right now, you are worth just in coaching your client 1.5% per year. We've quoted from the Dalbar studies, the Boston research firm, almost every year. They just want me to spend another $1,000 to buy their study for this year. I'm not gonna. I'll report later on the year when all the other guys that bought it write about it.
You can just crib off of there.
Of course.
Of course.
Well, I don't need it. I'm not in the practice anymore.
Well, you don't. A lot of them are, you know, similar to previous years.
But
anyway.
The Morningstar, total wealth asset allocation, dynamic withdrawal strategy, annuity allocation, tax efficiency through asset location, and withdrawal sequencing. Ooh, we just talked about that, didn't we? And liability relative optimization. You know what that is? Liability.
Well, it sounds relative, like sounds like assets versus liabilities.
Matching
your assets
to your liabilities. So if you need to eat tomorrow, to quote a famous financial advisor, if you need to eat tomorrow, that's a short-term liability, and therefore you should have a short-term, can I say it, bucket of money to meet that liability. And if you need to eat 20 years from tomorrow, that's a long-term liability, and you got a long-term asset, never the twain shall meet. You don't go out long to finance a short-term liability. You don't go out short to finance a long-term liability. That's what liability relative optimization is.
They had to give it a fancy title.
Yes.
You know, it's funny. It's funny. Those five things you mentioned, those were what Morningstar said would be something along the lines of a best practices advisor,
yes.
Somebody that does that. Most of them that I've seen, The first one about
asset allocation.
That's fairly standard. You're probably going to get that. Potentially, you could get a withdrawal strategy. A dynamic one could be arguable. I don't see the other three, four, and five. Oftentimes, that's not even looked at.
That's right.
By advisors.
So Morningstar says an individual's retirement income that followed this was 22.6% higher than those that didn't follow it. If you added Social Security in there, it's like 30% higher. And the percentage was about the same minus the 1.5%. So about 1.5% additional investment performance. That's Vanguard and Morningstar best practices. We'll be back.
If you're over the age of 50 and...
Welcome back, folks. It is the Ray Lucia Show. Golly, I can't believe we went through this whole hour. Let me just finish my train of thought here, because we're talking about best practices with financial advisors. So far, we covered Vanguard, the index fund champions. They say a good advisor, a best practice advisor, adds 3% per year net of fees. Now, if you're an advisor, you got to do this stuff. You just can't say you do it, right? Morningstar says... you can add 22 to 30% more income. They didn't look at the behavioral coaching part of it.
Right.
There are more studies. Russell, that's a big, huge firm, right? Russell Investments?
Well, sure. Yeah.
They did a study. How much is an advisor worth? 4.08% after a 1% charge, 3%, just like the others. And they look at the same stuff. Let's see. Wade Fowle wrote about this, okay? Common investor behaviors that hurt investments. It's a blog. Discussed many of the common investor biases and the potential harm they may bring to an investor. He also quotes from a Financial Engines study with Aon Hewitt. They looked at defined contribution plan participants between 2006 and 2012. They found 30.3%. of those electing to receive some sort of help with their retirement plan, on average, earned 3.32% more per year.
3.32%. That's beyond what they that's the extra percent. It's not that they earned 3.32%. That is the extra that on average they earned.
Yeah, and there's more. I really can't get into all this because, as I said, I wrote like 26 pages.
Why don't we have like an e-book on this stuff?
Well, if the people want it, I'll convert it into an ebook.
I don't see why not. I mean,
if you proofread it for me.
Well, you have no
problem.
You're
the editor.
Well, I'm the editor, but you have a punctuation and run on sentence issue.
Because I grew up in South Philadelphia in an Italian family. What
nobody,
do you expect?
You don't pause. There's no pauses or the commas.
That's the way I talk in the air.
That's what I mean. So you'll go on for, you know, I divided one sentence into four sometimes. Because that's just how you talk.
What do we mean? Thank you, comma, John Dean.
Comma, for, yes, period.
Period.
Yes. It's nice to have you, period.
Indentation.
Dash, semicolon.
It is the way that I write. Well, when I sit down and write.
I know, you just crank it out.
I just crank it out.
Yeah.
And then, you know, my wife gets mad at me because I'll end up proofreading it and proofreading it and proofreading. It's better to just send it to you for punctuation
and
don't look back.
I should never give you anything that you wrote or whatever. Even if you're satisfied it's 100% perfect, if I hand it back to you, you're going to make changes.
No, that's true. That is true. So if you'd like to get a copy of this, folks, send me an email. Go to raylucia.com, and I will pass that along to Johnny Dean, who will be the fulfillment house for me.
Fulfillment
It'll
house.
It'll be
now,
an e-book.
We're not going to charge for this, are we?
Not yet.
Well, get it in.
All right, say the first hundred copies are free. How's that?
Yeah. Well, because we don't have any printing costs. It's an e-book, so it's easy to do.
Yeah, but I was trying to make a little profit here.
Well,
think I can make $25? That'd be $2,500. No, it's free.
It's free. Maybe the first 100. I will say that. All right. So email you at raylucia.com.
Yeah. Maybe I can start a multi-level marketing thing with all these people that. that get it for free, they can go out and sell it for $10 and split it with me five each.
Yeah, the old is that the Amway model, Mary Kay model?
Why not?
Yeah, why not?
Do we have any emails?
I do.
Okay, hit it, fellas.
You've got mail.
Yeah.
Oh,
all right, Andy has a question. We already got to Eric's thing on what we can say more about best practice advisors, but Andy, with this question here, Ray. Going into the weekend, I turned 70 this year. My wife is 58. Should I take my required minimum distribution and buy a life insurance policy to replace my Social Security if I were to die prematurely? I don't need the money. She's still working and I'm retired.
You know, we talked about this strategy a while back. And if you're in good health, it can be a very effective strategy. I'll give you an example. Let's say his Social Security is $30,000 a year, to pick a number, right? So $30,000 a year, his wife's 58, so she's going to live another 30 years at least, right?
Could even be 40, but yeah, 30.
That's about $500,000. So what he does is he takes his required minimum distribution, he pays tax on it, and what's left over, he buys a $500,000 life insurance policy with his wife as the beneficiary. He dies. She gets $500,000 tax-free. She reinvests that money to produce the $30,000 of income she's losing in the event that he dies prematurely. It's a very effective and reasonable strategy. Takes a lot of the risk out of it because, in theory, she might be able to invest the money in the retirement account and do just as well.
Yeah, and even if she doesn't, I mean, the money is there. This is the idea here is when we talk about replacing Social Security, again, and I brought this up before, this is not something that a lot of people think about because you've got two people, let's say a married couple, they're both taking Social Security. They've heard that there's a survivor benefit. So they're thinking, well, I'll continue to receive my Social Security, and then my spouse, who has about the same benefit as I do, I'll continue to receive theirs as a survivor benefit. It doesn't work that way. If you have two basically equal Social Securities and one of the people dies, the only thing you get is the higher of the two. And if the Social Security payments are about equal, you're going to lose half your guaranteed Social Security income.
Yeah, the other thing that I think is sometimes missed in the calculations and so forth is the fact that the Social Security annuity has a cost of living adjustment.
Oh, yeah, it's another
thing. So it's going to go up every single year. When you've got a 58-year-old spouse and you're 70-something, as you said, she could be alive for 40 more years. And to replace $30,000 of inflation-adjusted income, I mean, $500,000 would be the absolute minimum. It's probably more than that if you wanted to account for, say, 2% annual increases inflation.
Oh, sure. And that's probably about right. That's probably about average what you're going to get over that.
So I what's his name? I think it's a great question.
Andy.
Andy, great question. I think it's a pretty wise thing to do. Now, clearly, if you're not 70-something and you can do this ahead of time, I mean, why not? Why not permanentize some of your insurance ahead of time? There's really competitive life insurance policies today that take care of long-term care. They take care of critical illnesses, dementia, cancer, all of that stuff, where you can accelerate the death benefit. Talk to a really smart financial advisor about that. We're out of time. Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you, sir.
And thank you all that email me. Go to raylucia.com, RayLucia.com. Ask for the best practices ebook. It'll be free. Now go out and make it a great day. God bless. Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Ray Lucia Show, bringing you the best in money information, answering questions about your biggest financial challenges, talking about your money, your business, and your life. Ray Lucia is not a registered representative of or affiliated with any securities brokerage or investment advisory firm. The views and opinions expressed by Ray and his guests are not necessarily those of this station or its sponsors and should not be construed as legal, tax, or investment advice. You should always consult with the appropriate advisors before making any financial decisions. Ray is...
This is Biz Talk Radio, America's home for